This is Audible.
Radiance, written by Grace Draven, narrated by Gabrielle Baker. This book is dedicated to those who inspire and those who make it happen. Mel Sanders, Laura Gasway, Isis Souza, Emma Ricks, Gabrielle Baker, Kim Sayer, and Cheryl Schnitzer. Thank you. Chapter 1. Today was Ildiko's wedding day, and if she managed not to retch on herself or a guest, she'd considered the entire event a resounding success. Her maids refused to meet her gaze while they laced her into her gown and twitched the train into perfect folds. But she'd caught their looks of pity, mixed with horror from the corner of her eye. Ildiko told herself to ignore them. Arranged marriages were the fate of nearly all aristocratic Gowri women, each one made for power, for trade, for good of country. His Majesty, Sangur the Lame, had married off both his daughters to princes of foreign lands, as part of the negotiations for access to ports and allies in war. The Gowri king's niece was no exception to the protocol, and Ildiko had always expected a similar fate. The only question was when, not if, it happened. But you never expected a Kai groom. The thought scraped across her mind. Saliva flooded her mouth as a nausea roiling in her belly threatened to surge into her throat. Ildiko closed her eyes and swayed where she stood on the tailoring stool. A hand gripped her leg to steady her, and she opened her eyes to stare down at the royal dressmaker. Worry lines gathered even more wrinkles into the woman's face. She spat the pins clamped between her lips into her free hand. "You all right, m'lady?" Ildiko nodded. She wouldn't shame herself or the Gowri court by falling apart before their Kai guests. She breathed deep to quell her fear. The time for tears and sickness had passed. She'd indulged in her terror earlier in the privacy of her bedroom. She might be chattel, but she would remain dignified. Her future husband faced the same fate. With the gift of privilege came the burden of expectation. As a younger son of the Kai King, his duty was to marry in a way most beneficial to his people. He'd meet Ildiko for the first time as they stood before a flock of bishops and pledged their troth to each other. A trickle of cold sweat slid down her back beneath the gown. As his wife, she'd have to bed him. No one ever heard of any living children born to a Kai and human couple. But that didn't matter. A consummated marriage acted as the blood seal on a contract, even if she never bore him children. If Sangur the Lame didn't think it might offend his future in-laws, he'd insist on a contingent of witnesses standing in the bridal chamber to verify the consummation and assure everyone the alliance he'd wrought through this arranged marriage was complete. But the Kai were not human, their culture different and mostly unknown to those outside their borders. Ildiko was grateful for their mystery, which prevented such a public humiliation. The royal dressmaker tugged a few more times on her gown, snapped out orders to her assistant seamstresses to pick up pins, thread and needles, and pronounced their work done. She helped Ildiko off the stool. "Come to the mirror and see, m'lady. You look beautiful." Ildiko followed her to the full-length mirror standing in one corner of her room. The pale reflection looking back at her did nothing to cheer her, and, for a moment, she fancied she stared at a stranger. The gown was a masterful creation of embroidered bronze silk that hugged her breasts, hips and thighs, before flowing out into a skirt and train. The fabric followed the line of her shoulders, but left her neck and collarbones bare. Long sleeves ended at points over her hands. Her hair was coiffed in an intricate style of braids, woven together and fastened with jewelled pins. She wore the rich trappings of a woman of high station and great wealth. She frowned at her image. Oh, what a waste. Behind her, the dressmaker blanched. "You don't like the gown, m'lady?" Ildiko reassured the woman. She considered the gown perfect. "However, I think all this will be lost on my groom and his Kai entourage." The other woman's lip curled in disgust. "Ugly bastards, all of them. What would they know of beauty?" She realised the insult in her remark. "I'm sure your groom will be different and appreciate how lovely you are." The likelihood of that happening was small. Were she marrying someone other than a Kai, the dressmaker might be right. She only hoped she and her intended managed not to bolt in opposite directions when they first sighted each other. She requested an hour of privacy before she had to present herself at court, and sent the group of dressmakers and maids from the room. The scent of spring flowers from the garden drifted through the chamber's open window, enticing her. Ildiko would miss very little when she left with her new husband for his home. She was the king's niece, the orphan child of his younger sister. Her place in the family ensured a stately home, regular meals and fine clothes. It ensured nothing else, and there was no love lost between her and her living relatives. This new marriage might offer nothing different, except a change in her place in court hierarchy. By marrying the prince, she became a duchess, a Kai Hersegese. The window opened onto a panoramic view of the manicured gardens, with their rolling swards of green grass, fanciful topiaries, and colourful borders of flowers. She would miss the gardens. They had been her sanctuary over the years, an escape from her harassing cousins and a means to assuage her loneliness. If the Kyrol family had gardens, Ildiko suspected they were nothing like these. She imagined all manner of strange, macabre plants twisting and swaying as they grew out of exotic soil by moonlight, and bloomed with menacing flowers that hid fangs amongst the petals. One didn't walk amongst such flora without armour. She shivered. Her thoughts propelled her out of her room and down a short flight of stairs to a back hall leading to the gardens. Warm sunshine caressed her shoulders. Ildiko raised her face to the light and breathed deeply of honeysuckle and jasmine. The dressmaker would have a fit of the vapours when she saw the ruin done to her creation's hem. But the thought didn't stop Ildiko from journeying into the depths of her favourite place in all of Gao. Besides, no one at the wedding would be looking at her hem. They'd be too busy gawking in horror at either the groom or the bride. She strolled leisurely along a winding path that meandered past bubbling ponds, filled with large goldfish as tame as dogs, regiments of poisonous foxglove in every colour and hue, and clusters of orange butterfly vine draped over trellises and swarmed by hummingbirds. Willow trees hugged the shores of the larger ponds, creating canopies of green shade that sheltered ferns and silver-leafed lungwort. Ildiko had spent many a quiet hour as a child hidden behind a willow's drape, reading a pilfered book in the dappled light that spilled through the branches. Stately oaks dotted the landscape, their great branches of rutted bark thick with leaves. She followed the path leading to one of the giants. She didn't visit this part of the garden often. The queen's roses grew here, and Ildiko avoided those places the queen favoured. She felt safe enough visiting today. Fantine was too busy playing hostess to her guests or counting the treasures they'd brought as bride gift. Ildiko could admire the hundreds of rose bushes planted in clusters and lines, in solitude. Or, so she thought. She turned a corner and halted. A figure, cloaked and hooded in black, stood motionless next to a dense patch of thorny roses, the colour of blood. It turned at the sound of Ildiko's steps. She inhaled a harsh breath. A pair of Narcerous eyes, without iris or pupil, stared at her from the hood's shadowed depth. A long-fingered hand, grey-skinned as a corpse's, and tipped with dark nails, lifted in silent greeting. Ildiko balanced on the balls of her feet, poised to flee. If she didn't know better, she'd believe she'd stumbled across a demon amidst the roses. This was no demon, despite appearances, but one of the Kai, and it would be the height of rudeness for her to run screaming from a future relative by marriage. Chapter 2. Brishan braced for an ear-pinning scream from his unexpected visitor, or, if he was lucky, a quieter gasp and mad dash through the hedgerow to escape him. The Gowrie woman who stared at him wide-eyed with her strange gaze did neither. He'd obviously startled her with his presence in the garden. She flinched away when he raised a hand in cautious greeting, but she didn't run. "Forgive me, madam," he said softly. "I didn't mean to frighten you." Most of the Kai party sent to witness the wedding and accompany the bride and groom on their return journey to Harrodis had travelled to Prisid, the Gowrie kingdom's capital, a fortnight earlier. They'd had time to adjust to the Gowrie's appearances. Brishan and his personal escort had arrived only the previous day. Though he and some of his troop dealt with the Belladine humans neighbouring his territorial borders, he didn't think he'd ever seen so many repellent-looking people gathered in one place. Thank the gods he wore a hood that hid his expression. Otherwise, he might inadvertently give insult to his unintended companion. She was young, that much he could tell. To the human Gowrie, she might be beautiful or banal. To him, she was profoundly homely. His upper lip curled in distaste at the sight of her skin. Pale, with pink undertones, it reminded him of the flesh of the bitter mollusk Kai dyers boil to render amaranthine dye. Her bound hair burned red in the punishing sunlight, so harsh and so different compared to the Kai women with their silvery locks. Her eyes bothered him most. Unlike the Kai, hers were layers of opaque white, blue ringed in grey, and black pinpoint centres that expanded or contracted with the light. The first time he'd witnessed that reaction in a human, all the hairs on his nape stood straight up. That, and the way the contrasting colours made it easy to see the eyes move in their sockets, gave the impression they weren't body parts, but entities unto themselves, living as parasites inside their host's skulls. He was used to seeing the frantic eye-rolling in a frightened horse, but not a person. If the parasite impression didn't repulse him so much, he'd think humans lived in a constant state of hysterical terror. The woman crossed slender arms. Despite the odd skin and grotesque eyes, she had a lovely shape and regular facial features. Brishan began to bow, eager to take his leave of this awkward situation. "What do you think of the Royal Gardens?" Her question made him pause. She had a pleasant voice, even yet not toneless, low but not hoarse. Brishan cocked his head and studied her another moment before speaking. She'd lost the frightened hair look, and while he still had difficulty correctly reading the more subtle emotions in human faces, he could tell she watched him now with curiosity instead of fear. Had she asked him what he thought of Sangur's armoury, he might have waxed more eloquent. He shrugged.
"There are plants and flowers and trees."
He paused and offered her a pained smile she surely couldn't see within the depth of his hood.
"And a lot of sunshine."
She motioned to him to follow her. He hesitated before falling into step beside her, until she led him to a stone bench cast in the shade of an oak's thick branches. She sat and indicated he do the same. It was Brishan's turn to startle. During his short time in Prisid, his Gowrie host had been civil, accommodating, and almost obsequiously polite. They were never friendly. This woman's affable manner surprised him. He sat, grateful for the relief from the bright summer light. She turned to face him, her parasitic gaze scrutinising every part of him, from his booted feet to his hands resting on his knees, To his eyes he knew glowed back at her from the hood shadows. "Does the sunlight truly bother your eyes?" He blinked. He'd expected her to ask his name or offer hers. He liked that she didn't. This brief anonymity offered a certain respite from formality. He was a prince of the blood, and the Gowrie stepped lightly amongst Kai royalty.
"We are a people of night. We see better in the dark. The moon is the sun to us. We live by her light."
"Yet you walk our gardens in mid-afternoon,"
Brisson chuckled. "I guarantee no other Kai will be about."
Her serious features relaxed into a wide smile. She possessed the teeth of a tiny horse, white and square, except for two pairs of pathetic canines. He'd seen Kai toddlers with milk teeth sharper than those. He tried to focus on her words.
"Nor Gowrie either. The royal household is far too occupied at the moment with its guests and the wedding."
The way she said wedding, in the same way someone might have said execution or torture session, made him splutter with laughter. He had no doubt he'd uttered the same words in the exact same tone recently. She was a challenge to look upon without wincing, but he very much liked her wry humour. Until now, he'd wondered if most Gowrie were only capable of speaking in monosyllabic sentences. His kin, who'd come here before him, had little good to say about them, finding fault in everything, from their manner of dress to their food preferences. Brisson had no expectations about his bride, but he hoped she might possess a small amount of the same pleasant demeanour this woman exhibited. He gave an exaggerated sigh.
"A more tiresome affair of state I've yet to attend. Gowrie and Kai each wondering who might eat the other first." His companion's eyebrows rose. Her lips closed over her teeth, and she smiled archly.
She pointed to his face and then to his hands.
"I think the Kai with their teeth and claws have the advantage over the Gowrie in that contest."
Brisson snorted. "True, but you can rest assured. We don't find humans particularly appealing as a dinner item."
"Well then, that's good to know. I'm sure I taste awful."
She lowered her gaze and smoothed the heavily embroidered silk of her gown over her knees.
Brisson swore he heard a whisper of true relief in her gentle sarcasm. She lifted her gaze once more. He twitched. Lover of thorns, but those eyes disconcerted him. "You don't have to answer, of course, but do you think the Kai prince will hate his wife?" She stunned him with the question. Brisson had always considered himself an agreeable man. He didn't envy his older brother's place as heir to the throne, understood his duty to his kingdom, and never balked at the fact he was merely a pawn in the endless power machinations between empires. He assumed his future wife had no choice in the matter either. They were duty-bound by their stations.
"I think the prince expected to marry a Kai noblewoman and father children one day. He never imagined an arranged marriage with a human woman to seal a war and trade alliance between Bas Haradis and Gower. He might resent the circumstances thrust upon him, but I doubt he'll bear any ill will towards his future wife. She's as much a pawn in this as he is."
Brisson frowned.
"Unless the bride is a foul-tempered harpy."
He liked her laughter, a throaty chortle as if she found some additional secret mirth in the moment. She braced an elbow on the bench's back and rested her cheek in her palm, the pose striking in its casualness.
"I'm sure her mother called her that a time or two, but she tries very hard to be pleasant."
They gazed at each other before she knocked him flat with another question. "You find me ugly, don't you?"
Brisson had faced abominations on the battlefield without flinching, leapt into the thick of the fighting against creatures born from the nightmares of lesser demons. Not once had he been tempted to run away in fear. Now, his leg muscles rippled with the urge to flee. He clenched his teeth instead,
prayed he wouldn't start a war with their newest ally, and answered honestly,
"Hideous," he said. "A hag of a woman."
Another peal of laughter met his words. Brishan wilted, relieved she took no insult in him so bluntly validating her assumption. He didn't even know her name, but he liked her and didn't wish to hurt her. Assured she wasn't planning to flounce off and send a pack of offended relatives after him, he turned the same question on her.
"And you," he said, "you don't think me a handsome man?"
She shrugged.
"I've only seen your hands and eyes. For all I know, you're hiding the face of a sun spirit in that hood."
Brishan scoffed at the idea.
"Hardly."
He'd never lacked female company, and his people thought him well favoured. Certainly nothing as wretched as a sun spirit. He slid the hood back to his shoulders. The woman's eyes rounded. She inhaled a harsh breath and clasped one hand to her chest. Her mollusk skin went a far more attractive shade of ash. She remained silent and stared at him until he raised a hand in question.
"Well?"
She exhaled slowly, the space between her eyebrows stitched into a single vertical frown line.
"Had you crawled out from under my bed when I was a child, I would have bludgeoned you to death with my father's mace."
Brishan rocked back on the bench and howled. When he finished, the woman was staring at him with her horse-tooth smile in place. He cleared his throat.
"I don't know whether that's a testament to my looks or to your penchant for violence."
"The first, if you visited me, I'd have to cover all the mirrors in my house or replace a lot of cracked glass. You could put a pack of wolves to shame with those teeth."
He snapped his teeth together in a feral grin. She didn't draw away from him.
"At least I have all my teeth, which is more than I can say for a lot of the Gowri men and women. Besides, I'd rather look like I can bay instead of whinny."
They laughed together then, until the woman's features turned sombre. "Thank you for not lying about what you thought of my appearance. You might have a face to turn my hair white, but your honesty is handsome." She charmed and fascinated him, and Brishan wished he had the leisure to know her better, but there was no time. He married at dusk, when both human and Kai eyes could see each other clearly and recoil at the sight. Voices in the distance carried across the green lawn and into the oak-shaded sanctuary. The woman rose and scraped her hands across the imaginary wrinkles in her skirts. "I have to go. I am missed." Brishan rose as well and captured her hand, surprised at its warmth when he had expected cold, flaccid flesh. She didn't try to break free of his clasp as he lifted her fingers and brushed his lips over her knuckles. "I have enjoyed our chance meeting, madam." He released her and bowed. She returned a brief curtsy and a last smile. "As have I, sir. You have lessened my worries. We'll meet again." She turned and hurried towards the voices growing ever closer. He might glimpse her at the wedding, but there would be no chance for a second conversation. Brishan called after her.
"What is your name?"
Her voice drifted back on a hot breeze, raising his suspicions and his hope. "Ildiko. I am Ildiko." She disappeared behind a hedgerow. Brishan stared at the path she'd taken, her figure no longer visible. Surely his luck did not run this true. His Gowri bride was named Ildiko. Chapter 3.
"You make a passable bride, Ildiko, and will adequately fulfil your duty to the kingdom and our family."
Queen Fantine sniffed as she cast a critical eye over her niece's appearance.
"And don't forget that duty extends to the bedchamber. It doesn't matter that he's practically a hobgoblin. You're not to jeopardise this alliance by denying your new husband."
Ildiko clenched her jaw so hard her temples throbbed. Her aunt had repeated this same admonishment so many times, Ildiko could recite it in her sleep. If she said it one more time, Fantine would find herself chewing on a mouthful of one of Ildiko's beaded slippers. A soft rap on the receiving door drew the Queen's attention away from her.
"Enter!"
she called out. The door cracked open, admitting a wide-eyed court page. To Ildiko he looked as if he'd eaten a dozen lemons, whole. He bowed to Fantine.
"Your Majesty, His Royal Highness Brishan Kashkim of Bassaradis wishes to speak with Lady Ildiko."
He paused.
"Alone?"
Ildiko's annoyance became trepidation. She laced her fingers together to hide their trembling and turned to fully face the door. Beside her, Fantine bristled in outrage.
"I think not. It violates all customs and proper conduct. He can speak to her after the marriage is proclaimed official. The wedding is less than half an hour away, anyway. He can wait."
A grey hand tipped with pointed nails curled over the page's shoulder. The man gave a yelp and leapt to the side, leaving space for a cloaked figure to stride through the opening. The Queen and the attendants gasped as one. All but Fantine dropped into curtsies as the Kai Prince bowed respectfully before her.
"Your Majesty, I beg your indulgence. A private moment with my bride, please."
Ildiko wobbled in her curtsy. That voice. She recognised that voice. The cloak was different than the one he'd worn in the garden. Still muted tones of black and grey, but lavishly embroidered and cut more for ceremonial use than everyday wear. Amongst the vibrant roses, he'd been a shadow. Here, in the receiving room, backlit by the western sun's fiery descent, he was a featureless silhouette. She straightened to stand, silent and impassive next to Fantine. The Queen scowled, her expression carving meandering rills into the pale mask of her face paint.
"This is improper, sir, prince or not. Can't it wait?"
Ildiko slid a surprised glance to her aunt. That Fantine wouldn't just order the Kai Prince to leave at once spoke volumes. She might counsel her niece to death on duty and the importance of this alliance, but she was no hypocrite. She wouldn't jeopardise it either, and afforded Brishan an unusual leniency with her question. The prince obviously knew he held the upper hand.
"No, Your Majesty, it cannot. I ask only a little of her ladyship's time."
"You will be late for your own wedding," Fantine cautioned.
"I assure you, we will not."
Brishan remained exquisitely polite and steadfastly determined. The Queen's eyes narrowed. She shot a warning look at Ildiko, who had no trouble interpreting its message.
"Watch your tongue."
Ildiko nodded. Fantine motioned to the maids who lined up behind her like infantry.
"You have a quarter hour, no more."
She swept out of the room on a tide of dignified annoyance. The maid last in line turned, gave Ildiko a pitying glance, and closed the door behind her. As soon as they were gone, Ildiko broke into a smile.
"It's you!"
She didn't bother hiding the relief in her voice. The prince closed the distance between them and pulled back his hood, once more revealing lamplight yellow eyes set deep in their sockets, sharp bone features cast in shades of slate, and a toothy smile that made her lock her knees against the urge to leap away from him. He reached for her hand. Ildiko didn't hesitate and placed her palm in his, still startled by the unexpected warmth of his skin. If she closed her eyes, she could easily imagine his touch as that of a Gowrie suitor's. He brushed his lips lightly across her knuckles a second time and released her.
"Are you disappointed?"
That lambent gaze gave nothing away other than a hard squint as a shaft of sunlight speared a window and glanced along his profile. Ildiko led him to a dimmer part of the chamber,
where candles provided a gentler light. Relieved, not disappointed, she gestured to a nearby table, holding glasses and a decanter of wine. "Can I offer you a drink?" Brishan shook his head, the tiny braids woven into his long black hair, swinging with the movement. He shrugged his cloak off his shoulders so that it draped down his back. The motion revealed ceremonial armour of blued plate over layers of rust and brown silk. A sheathed sword hung at his hip. Like those of his kin who guested in the castle, he was tall and lithe, every movement an exercise in grace and economy. Ildiko tilted her head to one side. "You knew I was your intended before you came here, didn't you? How?" His eyebrows arched.
"You gave me your name when I asked, remember?"
"There are several Ildikos living here. It's a common enough name. I could easily have been a servant."
Brishan chuckled and pointed at her. "In that fine gown? Hardly."
He flashed his fanged smile. Ildiko didn't lock her knees this time.
"I just knew.
Call it instinct." He snapped his fingers with a click of nails.
"Or Kai magic. We're all born with a touch of it, you know."
She shook her head, her own lightheartedness giving way to worry. "No, I didn't know. I know very little about those who will become my people once we're married." He stared at her for a silent moment. Owl's eyes, she thought. He and his folk had the eyes of nocturnal hunters, but without pupils, just a glowing luminosity that mesmerized her like a mouse.
"I will teach you," he said.
She blinked, startled out of her stupor by his reply, and completely forgetting the thread of conversation. "Teach me what?" He had thin lips with a natural downturn, emphasized by diagonal grooves on either side of his mouth. It gave him a grim look, except when he smiled, which he did now. "About the Kai. If you wish to learn, I will teach you. Far better than any wrong-headed Gowri book written about us." A wash of relief poured through her, along with a kindling of hope. Her bridegroom wasn't Gowri. He wasn't even a human. He was, however, congenial and gracious. She had proclaimed his appearance ghastly and his honesty handsome. Ildiko still stood by both opinions. She could have done infinitely worse. More than a few Gowri women had the misfortune to marry human men with handsome faces and ghastly souls.
"That's generous of you. I intend to hold you to your offer," she said. Her curiosity about his visit remained. "I've led you astray from your purpose. What did you wish to speak with me about?"
Brishan clasped his hands behind his back, and Ildiko had the distinct impression he braced himself to approach an uncomfortable subject.
"My question is a delicate one, and I mean no insult by its bluntness. Have you thought of the consummation?"
Ildiko's stomach undulated against her ribs. She fought down a mortified blush and sought to disguise it by a disdainful rolling of her eyes. Brishan took a quick step back.
"Everyone has been thinking about the consummation," she said. "I can hardly escape all the well-meaning advice, sympathetic pats on the arm, and suggestions for various tricks to employ for how to lie back and think of duty to king and country. The most popular advice is to make sure the room is so dark I won't be able to see my hand, or yours for that matter, in front of my face."
Brishan's shout of laughter echoed throughout the room before he clamped down on his mirth and settled for a wide grin and luminous eyes that glistened.
"I've been told something similar, only we should consummate at noon when I'll be virtually blind."
Ildiko muffled her own laughter behind her hand.
"May the winged god burst and save us from so much helpful guidance."
The laughter faded, but their smiles remained. Brishan thinned a little.
"What do you want to do, Ildiko?"
He had asked a question Ildiko thought she'd never hear in her lifetime. No one ever asked her what she wanted.
They only told her what she was to do and say. For a moment, she was struck dumb. He waited patiently as she gathered her thoughts.
"May I be honest, Your Highness?"
He snorted. "In private, call me Brishan. It's a decent enough name."
"It's a fine name. Were you actually born during a rainstorm?" Though he didn't seem as volatile or violent as a storm, his name fit him. Ildiko suspected his easy nature cloaked a character as strong as crucible steel.
Brishan nodded. "You're leading me astray again, Ildiko." "To answer your first question, yes. I not only desire your honesty, I demand it." He shrugged. "Besides, I think it's a little late to tiptoe around each other, don't you? I've called you hideous, and you've expressed your opinion of my looks by declaring them worthy of a skull-crushing. I doubt we'll offend each other's vanity at this point. Speak your mind."
Ildiko placed her faith in his reasoning and said, "I like you, Brishan, but can we delay the bedding? It's not even necessary, really. I can't bear you children, and I'm told the Kai royal line is secure. You have how many nephews?"
"A veritable litter. 6, at last count."
Brishan bowed.
"I accede to your wishes, madam."
Ildiko forgot propriety, dignity, and all reserve. She lunged at Brishan and wrapped her arms around his neck in a tight embrace. He went rigid in her hold. She didn't care.
"Thank you."
She gave him a quick peck on the cheek and let him go before he could either free himself or hold her to him. He inclined his head as another small smile curved his mouth.
"Believe me when I say it is I who should be thanking you."
Ildiko returned his smile, then followed his gaze as it drifted past her shoulder and caught. She turned and saw the full-length mirror standing in the last rays of afternoon sun. Brishan came to stand beside her, and the two stared at their reflections amidst the fine shimmer of golden dust, red-haired Gowri woman and glowing-eyed Kai prince. Brishan addressed their images.
"We'll manage well enough together, Ildiko of Gower."
She briefly touched his shoulder.
"I believe you, Brishan of Bas-Haradith."
A hard pounding on the door warned them their private meeting was over. Brishan presented his arm to Ildiko.
"Ready to get shackled, madam?" She rested her hand on the crook of his elbow.
"Try not to smile too widely, Your Highness. You'll scare the children in the crowd."
Chapter 4. Brishan glanced at his new wife, who slouched in the saddle as she rode beside him. They travelled with a party of 24 Kai towards Bas-Haradith's eastern borders and the capital of Haradith. A half-moon, scudded by fast-moving clouds, glimmered above them. Ildiko's hair shone grey instead of red in the moonlight, her face wan and drawn from lack of sleep. He'd tried to coax her into the small wagon that held a pallet and supplies so she could sleep during the journey. She flatly refused. "Your days are to be mine now. I need to adjust as soon as possible." She'd punctuated that declaration with a successive trio of yawns. Brishan wagered she wouldn't make it to dawn, but had a horse readied for her anyway. He, his bride, and his fellow Kai had taken to the road right after the wedding banquet ended. Of the many weddings Brishan had attended during his lifetime, his had been the most ridiculous. The ceremony itself had been a proclamation of unification. Judging by the crowd's reaction, both Gowri and Kai, it might as well have been a declaration of war. Hands had gone to sword pommels on both sides, and each group watched the other, at the ready to hurl themselves across the flower-strewn aisle and cross blades. His kin were easily outnumbered by Gowri court warriors 20-1. Numbers alone guaranteed that if such a fight broke out, it would be bloody, but also brief. Considering the Gowri had pursued this alliance with zeal and the Kai had accepted with enthusiasm, he could only guess that such an acrimonious response to his union with Ildiko
had been the gut reaction of two peoples who knew very little of each other and resented giving up one of their own to those they found loathsome. He might not be able to read expression in her ghoulish eyes, but he had no trouble interpreting the worry lines creasing his bride's brow. He didn't automatically flinch this time when she glanced at him.
"Burson's wings, Brishan. We'll never get through the banquet without the spilling of blood."
She was right, and he racked his brain for a way to defuse the tense situation. The air thickened to a simmering broth of hostility when the Gowrie bishops proclaimed their union blessed and final. Brishan took both of Ildiko's hands, leaned forward and pressed a soft kiss to her cheek. She might have mollusk-pink skin, but she was warm and smelled of temple incense. He stepped back and flashed a quick grin. Her hands jerked in his grasp before she arched an eyebrow.
"Wolf," she said softly.
"Horse," he replied just as quietly. Ildiko's lips twitched before she finally gave in and let loose a peal of laughter. The sound was magic, more powerful than any sorcerer's spell, more startling than the roll of the Gowrie eyes. Both the Gowrie court and the much smaller Kai contingent visibly relaxed. Hands dropped from pommels, stiff shoulders relaxed, and nearly everyone stared at the newly wedded couple as if they were mad. Brishan took her in his arms and squeezed her until she squeaked.
"Well done, princess," he whispered in her ear. "Well done."
The threat of a brawl still lingered. Despite the obvious mutual acceptance between bride and groom, Brishan shuddered in the saddle as he recalled the banquet. Until then, he and his fellow Kai had eaten dishes prepared by a Kai cook Brishan's mother insisted they take with them. The Gowrie royal family had willingly offered a portion of the sprawling kitchens so the Kai chef could prepare meals for his people. Brishan had thought it a wagon load of pretentious nonsense, and the complaints from his people about Gowrie food juvenile rants, until he caught his first whiff of a Gowrie dinner being prepared and almost retched. His cousin, Anuset, had cast him a self-satisfying smirk.
"I told you," she said in a smug voice.
Oh, how right she had been. At the banquet, he'd sat beside Ildiko through interminable and insincere toasts of happiness to the couple. The wine and ale at least had been exceptional. The food was another matter. There had been a moment prior to the wedding when he feared a revolt from his kinsmen and a possible heresy. He'd gathered the members of his entourage in his guest chambers for an impromptu meeting.
"We need to show good faith towards our hosts. We'll eat what they prepare at the dinner following the wedding."
There had been hisses and cries of protest from every Kai. Anuzet's lip curled in disgust. "Have you seen the food these people eat? If it isn't already refuse, the way they prepare it turns it into refuse. I wouldn't feed it to a starved mongrel." Brishan didn't budge.
"Someone rip out your backbones while you waited for me to arrive," he snapped. That had silenced them all. "It's one meal. Your Kai warriors, war-trained and battle-tested. You can choke down a bowl of their soup and smile."
"First time I smiled at a Gowrie nobleman, I think he pissed himself."
Anuzet's comment heralded muffled laughter. She inclined her head toward Brishan. "You are our lord and prince. We follow you." Brishan had narrowed his eyes at her, a challenge cloaked in obeisance. They followed him. That meant they expected him to be the first to try every dish before they did. As their leader, it was a foregone conclusion. The role of leadership carried the burden of setting an example. He'd never turned away from that expectation. He heartily regretted the idea the moment a servant placed a steaming plate of brown ooze, accompanied by something that reminded him of a small frozen horse dropping. Ildiko sat next to him at the high table. She leaned close to whisper in his ear.
"It's a stew made with the king's own herd of cattle."
She pointed to the brown thing.
"That is a potato. Watch."
Ildiko split her own potato thing lengthwise, revealing two smoking slabs of pale inner flesh. The smell wafting to his nostrils made him think of wet dirt. She used her fork to eviscerate it into a heap of glistening mush. He was sure he'd just witnessed the brutal mutilation of a giant cooked larva. Brishan made a low choking sound and gripped the arms of his chair when she forked a small mound into her mouth. His kinsmen watched him from their places at the lower tables, their plates untouched as they waited for him to follow his own edict. He took several shallow breaths, followed Ildiko's lead, butchered the larva potato and took a hesitant bite. Grainy, soft and tasteless, it sat on his tongue, swelling in his mouth until he thought he'd gag. Once more, Ildiko leaned close.
"Brishan, there will be a riot if you spit it out."
He clamped his lips tightly closed and swallowed. There wasn't enough wine or ale in the world to kill the revolting smear coating his tongue. But he drained his goblet and Ildiko's before signalling a servant for more. The Kai continued to watch him, and he glared at every one of them until they picked up their own utensils and braved their potatoes. Their reactions mirrored his. He'd have to sleep with one eye open and his hand wrapped around his dagger for the next fortnight, or find one rammed between his shoulders in revenge. A tug on his sleeve made him turn his attention back to Ildiko.
"I'm sorry, Brishan. Is it that bad?"
He heard the sympathy in her voice and patted her hand to reassure her. Bad was an understatement. But he shook his head and lied through his fangs. "No, I've dealt with worse." He'd eat those words as well over the next three torturous hours. The stew had been as vile as a potato, but neither compared to the following courses of perfectly good eels, ruined as they curled in a gelatinous mould studded green with herbs. Guinea fowl, roasted and seasoned with some concoction that convinced him the royal cook wasn't a cook, but a necromancer who ground the bones of the dead and mixed them with the pepper. The cheese plate almost did him in, and he had to ask Ildiko twice if the ones speckled in greenish-blue weren't actually bits and pieces of fermented corpse. Her explanation of how the cheese was made had him wishing they'd served fermented corpse instead. He persevered and choked down some of everything, each bite followed by a generous swallow of wine. His kinsmen did as Anuzet promised and ate their servings, murder in their eyes as they glared at him over the rims of their goblets. His fervent prayers to every god who might listen were answered when King Sangur declared the banquet finished and made a final toast. There was no dancing to follow. Any other time, and Brishan would have been disappointed. The Kai loved to dance. Every celebration had dancing, and it wasn't at all unusual for the celebrants to dance until they collapsed from exhaustion. Now he was just thankful he didn't have to do more than rise and escort his new wife out of the room to the bridal chamber prepared for them. His stomach roiled, hating him as much as his fellow Kai did at that moment. Ildiko squeezed his hand as the Gowri maids waited to divest her of her gown. She waved them off and turned to him.
"There's no reason to stay any longer in Prisid, Brishan.
I have no quarrel if you wish to leave tonight. His ugly, great-hearted bride could obviously read his thoughts. He cupped her face with his hands and kissed her forehead. Are you sure, Ildiko? Don't you wish to tell your family goodbye? She plucked at his sleeve, and her mouth curved down. Grief, an old grief. Brishan was learning to read his wife's expressions, the way she read his thoughts. I said goodbye to my family when I prayed at my parents' tombs. There's no reason for me to linger here. With that, he left her to have the servants gather those things she had already packed and load them into the wagon that would accompany them to Harrodis. He found the rest of the Kai gathered in a small courtyard, sharing pitchers of wine between them. They rose together at his entrance and bowed. Anuzette approached him.
I hate you, she said.
He shrugged. I'll live. After that vile meal we all choked down for you. Don't bet on it, cousin. Brishan hid a smile. Anuzette was closer to him than his sibling had ever been. She was also his lieutenant and second in command of his troop. Deadly in combat and fiercely loyal to him, her death threats were empty ones. He remained wary, though. She'd have no compunction trying to beat him bloody if he annoyed her too much. "My wife wishes to leave now," he said. His eyes widened as the courtyard exploded into a frenzy of activity and several enthusiastic toasts to the new Herr Segese. Ildiko had scored her first victory with her Kai family, and she wasn't even here to witness it. They were loaded, saddled, and on the road as the moon began its descent toward the dawn. Normally, he rode at the head of his contingent, but this journey was different. With Ildiko's dower wagon along, they'd have to travel the main road through bandit country. Brishan's first duty was to protect his wife, and he rode beside her, surrounded by 24 armed Kai. He was armoured himself and bristling with weaponry. Ildiko hadn't balked when he helped her buckle on one of Anuzette's breastplates.
Is it so dangerous, then?
She chewed on her lip and stared down at the armour encasing her torso. Brishan adjusted the buckles and checked the seams at the shoulders to make sure she was comfortable.
It can be. It's a heavily travelled trade road with caravans ripe for the picking.
He handed her the travelling cloak her maids had set aside earlier.
Don't worry, Ildiko. They'll think twice about attacking us. We're not tinkers and we're heavily armed. It's not only the Gowrie who know of the Kai fighting skills.
She'd been awkward in the armour and shy around his kinsmen. They had averted their eyes when she first approached them, but bowed low and offered their congratulations to her, along with a salute of loyalty. Owl hoots accompanied the creak of wagon wheels and the clop of horse hooves, along with the rustle of night creatures that hunted in the forest bordering both sides of the trade road. Ildiko's eyes were closed, and she began to cant in the saddle, sliding toward Brishan. He nudged his horse against hers.
Ildiko, wake up!
She opened her eyes. The ever-changing pupils expanded to swallow the blue irises.
Is it morning?
She asked in a slurred voice. Brishan slid further back on the saddle pad, slipped his arms around Ildiko and lifted her from her saddle. He plopped her in front of him.
Not morning yet. But you're about to fall off your horse. If you won't sleep in the wagon, you can ride with me.
She nodded and nestled into the cove of his arms, metal armour clanking between them. The Kai prince held her against him, learning her warmth and her scent. The feel of her was no different from the Kai women he'd embraced. She was just as warm, her oddly coloured skin just as smooth,
her hair equally soft. With her asleep, he could tilt his head and gaze at her profile without the distraction of her eyes. He'd observed the noblemen of the Gowri court as their gazes followed Ildiko during the wedding ceremony. While Brishan didn't find her beautiful, it was obvious to him the Gowri men did. Still, he didn't regret this union. Ildiko was unique and witty, and he enjoyed her company. It was a promising start. Brishan settled her closer to him. He stiffened suddenly in the saddle at the whisper of sound.
"Shields!"
he bellowed, and shoved a startled Ildiko towards his mount's neck. Chapter 5. Ildiko woke abruptly to a mouthful of horse's mane and the weight of Brishan's body smashing hers to the saddle. The air around her hung thick and dark, and it took her a moment to realise she sheltered with Brishan beneath the dome of his shield. Something struck the metal with a hammering ring. Brishan rocked sideways, his arm and shoulder flexing against her side as he absorbed the impact of the blow. Ildiko clutched the pommel as the animal shied and pranced beneath her. Another hammer blow struck the shield. She gasped as she was suddenly swung to the ground and just as quickly encircled by an armoured wall of Kai soldiers. Their armour glinted dull, and their eyes shone bright in the dying moon's fading light. She yelped as a hand pushed her to the ground. "Stay down, Your Highness," a female voice commanded. Ildiko didn't protest as a chorus of twangs broke from the trees, followed by a volley of black splinters that arced into the lightning sky before falling toward them. She crouched, covering her head with her arms. Metal rang on metal as arrow points struck shield faces. They were under attack, and what very little she could see from her lowered position behind the barricade of Kai protectors, they were pinned in place, unable to flee or even engage the enemies who sheltered in the trees. That soon changed. Horses' hooves echoed from the forest depths. They were joined by battle cries and screams of pain. The road where they stood exploded into chaos. Men dressed for secrecy and ambush bolted into the open, pursued by newly arrived Kai cavalry in support of their brothers and sisters. The shield circle around Ildiko broke. She was jerked to her feet, and came face to face with one of the Kai women she'd seen at the wedding. Brishan had introduced her as his cousin, Anuzet. Those Narsarous eyes stared at her unblinking. "Follow me, Highness. Step lively." Ildiko recognised the voice and its authority, and sprinted alongside the woman until they reached the supply wagon. Anuzet tugged her down. "Under the wagon, Highness. Stay out of sight and don't move." She didn't give Ildiko a chance to argue, but bodily shoved her beneath the wagon frame. Ildiko dropped to her stomach. From her flattened vantage point, she saw mostly running feet. The Kai woman stayed close and was soon joined by three more of her compatriots. Ildiko searched for Brishan in the melee as their party, no longer outnumbered, clashed with their attackers. She glimpsed him fighting back to back with another Kai warrior. They faced a group of bandits. Brishan's partner fought with sword and shield. Brishan, however, fought as no Gowri nobleman ever would. He wielded a small bearded axe in one hand and a hunting knife in the other. The knife's blunt side was braced against the line of his forearm. The sharpened edge faced out. Brishan moved as all his kind did, quick and nimble as a cat. He slashed and stabbed with the knife, cut and cleaved with the axe, using the beard to hook his opponent off his feet. Ildiko prayed for his safety, for all their safety. She abruptly lost sight of him as a